everybody. Welcome to the Hallmarkies podcast. We are thrilled today. We are here to be talking fall harvest. Hallmark almost forgot about fall harvest, it seems like, but we didn't forget about it here on the Hallmarkies podcast. And I'm Rachel, and Cammie's here.
Hey, everybody.
Yes. And special guest Elise Murray's here.
Hi. Hey, everyone.
Yes. So let's just, I guess, the elephant in the room. How are you guys feeling about only two, really, when we're going to talk about it, really only one, plus Good Witch, which we will talk about with Georgia in our Good Witch recap. But just Hallmark kind of dropped the ball on Fall Harvest, feels like, this year, with them canceling two of the movies, and one of them not being that fall harvesty at all. Elise, are you kind of bummed out about that?
I am so disappointed. I was so excited. Like, fall harvest is like one of my favorite times of year. I think it's such like a great way to kind of transition into the Christmas season, which, like, obviously Hallmark starts super, super early. Not that we don't love it. Obviously we love all the Christmas movies we can get, but I do love, they started right on time. I'm so sorry.
No. I completely agree with you. It's early. I was just teasing.
So like, I love that kind of transition period from like the summer into the fall, into the winter. And I feel like only two movies was like, come on, I want more yeah. Like, you know, apple cider donuts and pumpkin carving and hay rides. I was a little sad, especially since we had four and we lost two. That was a bummer for me.
So bummed. I agree with you completely. I need my hot apple cider and my, yeah, snuggling on hay rides and yeah, the whole thing with fall. I need it. And, you know, apple picking.
I also feel like it's such a perfect time of year for like the Hallmark movie brand. Like, it's very cozy. It's like, yes, you think of like small towns and pumpkin picking, and like that's like a total kind of like iconic sort of Hallmark deal. So I was disappointed.
Yes. Yeah. And some of the best movies of the last few years have been fall harvest movies. I mean, I love Harvest Moon. I love the
Pumpkin Pie Wars.
Pumpkin Pie Wars. That's my favorite. Love it. It's so good.
Yeah, it's really good.
I have that in my notes.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. No, it's true. That one's really good. I loved Falling for You last year. That was
I think that was the first one that I watched that I recognized Tyler Hines, and I just went, wow. Yeah.
Well, that was that was his first Hallmark movie, and he was so good in that movie, and I loved that script. Joao Boken's script, I thought, was so good in that movie, and there's just been some of my favorites. I liked Harvest Wedding a lot with Jill Wagner and Victor Webster. That one was good, and there's just been a lot of really good fall movies. October Kiss.
I was just going to say say that one's a little older, but October Kiss. What I love about that one is it has Halloween in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they don't, a lot of times they just stick to fall, but I loved that they did Halloween. Yeah.
And we are going to try to have the Elisa Lucas for our On Friendship episode in October. We're going to try to do an episode of On Friendship on October Kiss. We're still working out some of the details with different things going on, but so hopefully we'll be covering that for Halloween. It's such a good one. And so it was a bummer, and it's just kind of frustrating because I feel like Hallmark has this sort of channels they've developed as far as social media and other things like that. So it would be nice if they at least explained it a little bit, like just put out a tweet saying, sorry, things aren't working out, whatever, just something, instead of just putting out movies and then just that's it. They didn't even say, oh, we canceled it or we're rescheduling it or nothing. There's just nothing. And so that's frustrating to me as well.
Yeah, some hope for like the future. Like, oh, we're hoping to put it on Hallmark Movies now, or maybe you'll see it next year, or something like that would be nice. It's a little disappointing not to get that kind of, especially because they put out all the plots and, you know, you get excited about them. So it'd be nice to see them have like a second life somewhere later along the line.
Yeah, yeah.
I personally was really looking forward to Jesse Schramm and Niall Mader.
Yes. I was so excited. Those are like two of my favorites.
Yeah. And they're not the most likely pairing. Mm-hmm. And so I was really looking forward to seeing what they were going to do. So yeah. And I love Niall Mader. My best friend, Sarah, mm-hmm. she's probably listening right now going, yes, 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 because she absolutely adores Niall Mader. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, and I did, and I was especially annoyed because I did an interview with Jesse Schramm that I haven't been able to air. So I'm just holding on to it until the plan is to air it on November 3rd. You can listen to it now if you're a patron of the channel. You can go on and listen to the podcast. You can go on and listen to the interview. But for everybody else, we are going to probably air it on November 3rd when they're re-airing Road to Christmas. But still, obviously, not as good as what I was hoping. But the only thing that we have heard has been from Rick Garman, the writer of A Country at Heart, that he said he put out a tweet saying that it has been moved to next year. So who knows?
There's hope.
What that means?
There's hope right there.
Yeah, I think Jesse Schramm tweeted something like, "Thanks for all the love. You know, don't worry, it's not gone forever." Like something kind of like that, but nothing concrete.
Yeah, and then
I'm
love.
Just wondering if something happened.
Yeah,
you know, I'm wondering if just they came up short and they just weren't ready or something like that, and they kind of had to scramble.
Yeah, I mean, it seems unlikely that would be the case for two movies. I can understand one movie, but two movies, it seems unlikely. But yeah, because Love Under the Olive Tree, I actually also interviewed the writer of Love Under the Olive Tree named Samantha Herman, and we will post that whenever she has some Christmas movies coming out. Coming that we'll have to post it when those come out. But anyway, it was just, would be nice if they would just tell us what's happening. It would be nice. But yeah, she wrote, Samantha Herman wrote, The Sense and Sensibility in Snowmen. So we'll post that
title.
Interview, when that airs. But anyway, so it's been a wild time, but we are feeling our deprivation of fall harvest. So it's frustrating.
I'll send you a package of hot apple cider packets. Okay.
Yeah. I think that's what I need. I think it's what
okay.
I need.
They're in the mail.
Yes. So, well, let's talk about the two movies we did get, and then we are going to talk a little bit about your book, Elise. So that's so exciting.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends, so for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Good latest book. And so, all right, we have Over the Moon in Love. And this was from written by Jessica Landis, which is really interesting. Her first script that, as far as I know, her first script that she's done. And it's with her matchmaking business on the verge of closing, Brooklyn finds herself in the unique position to be featured in a magazine, but has to set up the writer with her childhood friend, Devin. And so that's the plot. And it's directed by Christa Wolf, who we love on the podcast. And you have Jessica Landis and Wes Brown. And so, Elise, what did you think of this? What are your overall thoughts on this movie?
Well, we got to say it. We got to come out and say it right off the bat. It's not a fall movie.
No.
It is all about like a summer romance dance.
Yeah.
Definitely does not fit the theme. But I did really, I liked it. I think there were some bright spots. I laughed a lot. I thought it had some good comedic moments. I think it was really cool to see, you know, like Jessica Landis do the screenwriting and the starring, and she wrote the music, didn't she?
Yes.
They both did.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like what a Renaissance woman, like very cool. I think Hallmark is really great about hiring and like pushing female voices and like female artistic, you know, talents, which is awesome. So yeah, I wish it had had more fall. Like I literally drove, I'm in Malta at the moment, so I drove halfway across the island to go to the one Starbucks on the island to get a pumpkin spice latte to watch this movie with. And gotta tell you, it did not match. But it was still enjoyable.
Yeah, I liked certain elements of this movie. I liked sort of the Cyrano de Bergerac kind of parts that was sort of inspired by that kind of feel to it. There was some humor. Wes is always a dreamboat. He knows yes. how to carry a movie. So there were some good parts, but I had some issues too with some of the story and some of the things that happened. And I agree. This is not a fall movie at all. There's a summer soiree. She's wearing like periwinkle blue.
Yeah.
The entire time. There's not a mug of cider to be found. This was not a fall movie at all.
You're really hung up on that cider, aren't you?
Yeah, there was not anything fall harvest about it. And it's just frustrating when they had two other movies that they could have, although that Love Under the Olive Tree didn't look that fall-ish to me either. But still, you had other movies. Like, why? It's kind of frustrating. But there were some good things about it. I didn't hate it, but I had some issues. Wasn't my favorite. But what did you think, Cammie, of this one?
Well, this one's already been said, but the fact that they were so obvious about pointing out that it was a summer soiree, I went,
yeah,
wait a sec. I had no idea that Wes Brown had it in him to look that geeky. I didn't think it was physically possible for him to look that geeky, but they pulled it off so well, and that made the change all the better. Mm-hmm. That made the whole physical altercation go alternation. Sorry.
Alteration. Yeah.
That made the whole physical alternation all the more drastic, which I thought was fantastic. And the fact that they even could have passed for high school seniors, because that's hard to do when you're a 30 plus actor.
I thought, and you really, so you bought it, them as teenagers?
Yeah. Not the Jessica with the bangs. I thought that was a really good move, and I loved her. I loved the beginning scene. I thought that it was just so natural, and just she's going through the yearbook with her red marker, and he's playing the guitar, and she is naturally and automatically singing the song along with him, so she knows it and him that well. Now, of course, I had issues with it. My biggest thing with the plot line was Stephanie didn't feel it. played by Miranda friggin'. Uh-huh. Stephanie didn't feel it. Devin didn't feel it. Okay. Cut your losses and set her up with someone else. You know, why are you trying to push it? So,
I agree. Did you like that with them as teenagers, Elise?
It was one of the times I laughed the hardest.
Unintentionally?
I just, as soon as I saw them, I knew what they were going for. I knew they were meant to be teenagers, but I don't know what it was. I think it was the baseball cap. It made me giggle. I was like, oh, he's trying to be a teenager. And I even said out loud to my husband, they're trying to be teenagers. That's funny.
Yeah.
There's only so much you can do when you're 30 plus.
Absolutely. And I think for me, I think their dynamic worked. So, I think they're acting read as like teenagers, but the visuals didn't quite match up.
Yeah.
But I had a couple of costuming issues in this film. Just kind of generally. So the first scene, it worked for me on a story level, but visually I was kind of like,
I thought it looked ridiculous. I'll be blunt with you guys. I thought it was, I just don't know why you wouldn't just hire proper teenagers to film that one scene. They've done it many times before that we've had the teenagers and they have.
I did wonder about that. I thought it was cute that they were playing the teenagers, but I did wonder. Why they didn't hire teenagers to do it.
Yeah. Wes Brown is I think he's close to 40. It's ridiculous.
Pretty darn.
Yeah.
Pretty darn close.
Yeah. So it was absurd. And I don't know what it is that they think that bangs are the answer to making someone look like they're teenagers. I've never seen a lot of teenagers with bangs, but it's the same way at Love at the Christmas Table that when they wanted to make a Danica a teenager, that was their answer, is to give her terrible bangs.
It's because teenagers are the only ones ridiculous enough to make bad hair decisions, like that drastic. I had bangs when I was a teenager. It was a terrible decision.
Too.
Do not recommend.
Same.
So.
That's true. That's a good point. You explained it. Now I know why.
in the 80s, bangs were the thing. The big, huge, curly, puffy bangs. So
I had some, it might seem like nitpicks, but I just thought that the Devin, I guess, was not the smartest person when it comes to dating.
Oh gosh, no.
I mean, who on earth would take a first date to get ribs? It would be my nightmare if I showed up at a date and we were supposed to, not only is she vegetarian, which you should have consulted, and certainly the matchmaker should have told. The matchmaker, I would think, if I was going to a matchmaker, and I would think they would tell things like that, say, hey, you know, because the matchmaker, especially if it's a really important setup for getting this article and all of that, they're going to want to tell them that kind of thing so they don't look foolish, and that they're being matched up with someone that's a vegetarian, and you do not want to eat ribs on a first date. They're messy. You get your hands all dirty. It's a nightmare. I would never in a million years.
Well, it's quite a gutsy move to order for your first date on your first date. If I had gone to a first
date when it's a blind date,
yes. If you'd just been like, yes, I've ordered for you, I'd be like, no, I would like a menu, please. You may not select my dinner.
Yeah, absolutely. And then to make it his choices even more confusing, so he knows that she's a vegetarian, and his choice after messing up on the ribs date is to take her to a burger place. What? I mean, that is just, yeah, I get it. They probably have veggie burgers at this place, but it just felt so like this guy is just really clueless. I mean, if I had accidentally taken a vegetarian to a rib place, then on the second date, I would try extra hard to take her someplace I knew that she'd like yeah. a salad bar or something. Ridiculous. And so that annoyed me. And,
I think it very well could have been a writer's or an actor's choice to make it look like they're that awkward. Now, granted, it's not the best choice because there are other ways, but it made it that much more awkward. It made it that much more obvious that these two do not belong together. And I also thought that it made it a little bit more apparent that he's just so used to the way things were with Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And that he's used to that dynamic. And so he's just going along with his flow the way he remembered things, and it's not working this time.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. I mean, I can see that. That's an interesting point, but it was just to the point where it made him look stupid. Like, he's a grown man. Like, he should be able to. And also it made her not look very
that
good.
That doesn't mean anything, Rachel.
and I mean, it made her not look very good at her job if she's, you know, trying this amazing matchmaker. So that was weird. And then I felt like she was less a matchmaker and more a trick people into falling in love with each other. Like it bordering on unethical that you are keeping this, keeping so much from the people that, because I mean, I'd assume she actually wants the people that she is matching up, not just to get together, but to actually have a authentic, you know, prosperous union. Right. I mean, or is it all just about numbers for her? It was weird to me, that part of it.
Because of like the film being such an extraordinary circumstance, like it's so kind of different from what her normal matchmaking process looks like. Mm-hmm. I wish I had known what the normal matchmaking process looked like. Mm-hmm. So I felt a little bit more like, oh, she's not tricking people into falling in love. She's just kind of like guiding them along the way.
Yeah, because I mean, she basically is creating, instead of being honest with both of these characters so that they know who they're, she's creating an illusion that they're somebody that they're not, which is a really weird thing to do for your clients. I don't know. What do you think, Cammie, of that part?
To be honest, I hadn't really thought about it. I guess I was thinking about all of the other aspects. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I do think that it was a nice touch that when they're looking at the yearbook and mm-hmm. he says, you put all these people together, and she said, and they're all still together. I thought that was a nice touch. It kind of mm-hmm. shows her success rate. Mm-hmm. But I didn't like the fact that she was pushing them together. And mm-hmm. the other thing that didn't make sense to me was that such a wealthy and successful woman would go for a struggling musician. I mean, yeah. He's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else?
You right. Know? Yeah.
So that part didn't really make sense to me. But I will, however, say I loved the whole choreography and the scripting with the tree, with the walk that mm-hmm. Stephanie and Devin took with Brooklyn behind the tree. I loved that whole conversation. I thought it was incredibly raw. And mm-hmm. I really liked both Jessica's and Wes's emotions in that scene. And the fact that I thought it was a very bold move to say, I've been in love with Brooklyn. It's like, wow, that's a lot for a for a guy to say that to a woman he's, you know, trying to create something with. When he sang the song for Brooklyn at the end, and he said, I finished it, I found the missing piece, I honestly thought that he was egging her on. Mm-hmm. I thought he was I thought he was egging her on, trying to get a reaction out of her by saying Stephanie was the missing piece, because it so obviously didn't fit. But I also, and then I even wrote in my notes, is he trying to pull something from her? And then is it, he's honestly doing that to her. Yeah. But I loved the relationship of Wes and his brother, Matt. Of Devin and Matt. That's what I meant. I loved the dynamic. I loved the playfulness. I love that on the double date, he was looking at Brooklyn more than Stephanie. And that's how he noticed, you're doing that lip thing. What is it? What's going on? And that the two of them hit it off. It was a little obvious. Yeah. But you know, I really loved that it was so obvious that it wasn't working between Devin and Stephanie. And then boom, we got the fireworks. We got the stars in the eyes with Matt and Stephanie. Just hello.
Yeah.
And one thing I have to say about the brothers is it was the nicest, cleanest looking bachelor pad I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
It looked like a Southern Living catalog. I was like, no man lives in that house.
Yeah.
One little pile of laundry.
Anything.
No, but he did. True. Remember, he gathered up the laundry saying, sorry about that. So he had little pile of laundry, but obviously that was a huge mess.
I agree with most of what you're saying, but I think the answer to, you have these two people that are really different, that you've, at least at the beginning, evidently she felt they were going to be a good match. And I think the answer, instead of lying, having them pretend to be somebody different than who they are, the answer is to, I guess, make those differences sort of attractive and interesting. That would have been the way to go, as opposed to, well, don't be yourself and pretend to be somebody else, is weird advice. But I did like the Cyrano parts. I agree with you. I liked the whole scene in the closet where she's helping her with the questionnaire. Filling out the questionnaire. That was pretty funny, I think, worked well. And then on the date when she's feeding her the what to say, and he does say that, I think that was actually quite well done by the actors. But also I think that I would encourage Jessica to keep writing. I think
there were
some strong sections, and so I think I was good. I actually enjoyed the music, which I wasn't necessarily expecting to, because sometimes the original music in Hallmark is not my favorite. This, I actually liked the song they recorded. I think it's called Paradise or something like that. You can get it on iTunes. It was a pretty good song. I liked it way more than I expected, all the music.
There was that one scene when he was singing in the cafe, and there was a woman at the bar reading a book. And I put down in my notes, who can concentrate when a handsome man is singing that well? Yeah. You know, because she didn't look up at him once. So she's like, no, I don't believe it. when a guy as good looking as Wes Brown is crooning like that, no, there's no there's no way that nobody's looking up.
Wes Brown has got the romantic, like, wistful gaze down. He just knows how to deliver one of those, like, you're the only woman in the world looks. And it was very, very wonderful. I'm so glad I got to see that.
Yeah.
Rachel's an expert on those looks, aren't you, Rachel?
Yeah. He's got the smolder down.
Yes. He's got the smolder.
Yes, he does.
We talk about smolders a lot here.
But I also agree with you, Elise, about her wardrobe, the costume. I know it seems like a nitpick, but it really, I mean, first of all, that periwinkle blue did nothing for her. She's a beautiful woman, and it just washed her out. And I just thought that all of her clothes were they were so unflattering, and they made her look like she was like 90 years old. They were just such odd choices to me. And obviously fashion is very subjective, but I just thought not only was it very not folly, the clothes that she was wearing, but I just thought they were just weird choices. So I agree with you, Elise, about that.
Yeah, for me, it was just, they didn't seem to make sense storytelling-wise.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the visual contrast between her and Stephanie was, they looked like they all the pieces could have been from the same wardrobe, except for, like, color choices. Like, Stephanie was usually in darks, and Brooklyn was always in, like, you know, kind of bright summer colors.
Yeah.
And so for me, if you're trying to portray Brooklyn as this kind of like, you know, more down to earth, kind of earthy, like cool girl, whereas Stephanie is more like fussy and presentable or whatever. It didn't storytelling wise make sense to me, especially because like, I know a lot of people who live and work in San Francisco in very high end places and no one dresses like that. Like San Francisco is a very like jeans and a sweater kind of place. So it didn't necessarily make a whole lot of sense to me, just like from a storytelling angle. But so I was kind of, especially because she's so beautiful. Like she's a gorgeous person. So I wanted her to like really rock everything she wore. And I don't necessarily think it worked.
I agree with you 100%. It was odd choices in my opinion. And she's very like winter coloring and sense of like, she needs those bold, strong colors. And I don't know, that was weird. And then you have the summer soiree, which I was just like boiling. I was like, what is going on with the summer soiree in a Fall Harvest movie? I don't know. It's an interesting movie. Out of 5 crowns, Cammie, what would you give this movie?
Oh gosh, you're making me rate it.
Yes.
I don't know about overall, because there were parts that I liked and parts that I didn't. And so I could rate certain parts, but if I had to go all around, I'd probably say 3.
That's fair. Very good. Elise, what do you think?
I was going to say 3.2, and definitely encourage Jessica Landis to keep writing. I think she's got like some really strong instincts and really, really great comedy writing in here.
Yeah.
I didn't know decimal points were allowed. Dang it.
Oh, sorry. So I am going to give it a 2.5, but I agree, keep writing. There were some strong segments, but I have it in, we've watched 65 movies from Hallmark so far this year. Well, actually 64, because I have in this ranking the Mary Bright, which I have, they released on DVD for some bizarre reason. But anyway, so 64, I have this at 48 in my ranking for the year. So there we go. All right. Well, let's talk about Love, Fall, and Order. So I have to admit with this movie, this is one of the rare times where I feel like it was really hard for me to be objective. I had so much personal investment going into this movie.
Because they filmed it near you, right?
They filmed it near me. I actually got to meet Aaron Cahill. I've told the story on the podcast probably 3 or 4 times about how the Jackson Shaw from the Bubbly Sesh, they surprised me with Aaron Cahill showing up at dinner. We were there. So that was so fun. And I love her. I love Aaron. And I do think the Jackson Shaw are just the sweetest. And it was so much fun to meet them. And so seeing them in the movie was fun. And I pride myself on my being able to set aside all the personal stuff, my expectations, all that stuff, and be able to be objective. But this one was tough for me to, I still think I did it, but it was tough. And so I'm going to say that out front that I was really pulling for this movie. And it's The plot is when Claire goes home to save her dad's annual fall fest on her family's pumpkin farm, sparks fly with an old rival, the opposing lawyer she now faces in court. So, Cammie, what was your overall thoughts on this movie?
Well, like you, I had a hard time being objective because, number one, one of the producers, McLean Nelson, I've known him my entire life. Uh-huh. Our families grew up together. Our parents were best friends. Uh-huh. We even took family vacations together. So, and then his wife directed it. So, So he produced it. His wife directed it. My sister-in-law had a small part in it, and McLean's mother had a cameo in it, and then I also auditioned for the role that they ended up giving to Jackson Shaw. So, so I had a bit of a hard time being objective myself.
Mm-hmm. You would have been a great leaf peeper. 100%.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, that is wonderful of you to say. Thank you so much. Because in my audition, I went for bubbly. That's what they said. They said a bubbly tour guide. My husband said, "Oh gosh, you got that one in the bag." I was very happy for Jackson Shaw that they put in the cameo of them since they were Hallmark's official podcasters. Was I disappointed I didn't get the role? Of course. I haven't been able to act for a while, and so it would have been fun to do it, but there's lots of opportunities out there. And so I was very happy with what Jackson Shaw did. I thought they were adorable.
Mm-hmm. What did you think overall of this one, Elise?
I really liked it. I do think the title is a little wordy, but I really liked it. I was worried they were gonna like lean too heavy on like the courtroom drama.
Mm-hmm. That's what I thought too, but it wasn't
at all. And I really enjoyed that aspect of it. And I really love this director, and I'm really excited for her. Holiday for Heroes movie, like that looks really good too. So
I'll
like,
tell her you said so.
Yeah, I especially because it's Audrey Shulman, the screenwriter. It's like her first time out as well. Like you got two first time screenwriters on this one. So I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really fun, and it actually gave me like the fall vibes that I was looking for.
Yeah,
in droves.
Yes, it was definitely super, super fall. There's a lot of silly parts to this movie, but I think that's also all those parts are kind of part of the charm of it. Yes. And don't be mad at me, Cammie, but I actually have not been a big fan of this director. I really didn't like her Little Women movie, and I didn't like the In the Key of Love that came out earlier this year than
Hallmark
movies now.
Oh, right, she did direct
that.
I forgot.
Yeah, she did.
And so I was kind of nervous about that, but I think this is definitely the best thing that I personally have seen from her, and so that was good, and it does make me more excited about the like you said, the Holiday for Heroes, which I am looking forward to coming up, so that was good, and I love Erin Cahill. I think she is just the best. She's so warm and likable and sweet, and I that's one of my favorites, I think, with Trevor Donovan. He's always solid, and I thought they had really nice chemistry. I liked the overall idea of these sort of dueling lawyers. I feel like that's a dynamic we haven't gotten for a couple of years from Hallmark, and I almost always enjoy that dynamic of the sort of the battling lawyers, and I thought that it was fun having not just because it was Jackson Shaw as the Leaf Peebers. I thought that it was just a fun energy and really all of the side characters and the supporting characters I really enjoyed. I liked her sister. I liked his family. I liked Gregory Harrison as her dad.
Oh, I love Gregory Harrison as the dad. Oh.
I even really dug Drew Fuller as her ex.
A nerd!
Oh my gosh, you guys. Look, I am always about, like, the side characters. I want all of them to find love.
Yeah.
I loved the city planner. I loved his own gold glasses. I love the scene where he comes after, like, doing his city planning out on the farm, and he has his sleeves rolled up. I'm like, there is a movie where you find love, sir. Yeah. And I want it. I want the movie.
I agree.
I just adored him.
Yeah, and
I've never seen him look so nerdy. I have never. I mean, we're on nerds right now. First Wes Brown, and now Drew.
Yeah, and I've liked Drew Fuller ever since Army Wives, and so it was really funny to see him in this this nerdy role. But I agree. I could have seen a whole movie about Ben and his romance. If they did a spinoff, I wouldn't complain at all. And so that really worked for me. I really liked little scenes like their donut debate that they have. That was so cute. I really enjoyed that.
I love a good trivia contest.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Birthday Wish has the ultimate best trivia scene, but this is a very close second, and I did really like it.
Yeah, I agree with you about that.
One Winter Weekend was pretty good with trivia, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're right. Absolutely. Just that back and forth was really fun. And especially when they bring it back at the end, when he says, how do I feel losing to the girl I had a crush on ever since high school? That whole ending scene, I thought worked great. It was so good.
The fact that they kept that theme rolling through the movie, I really liked that. I also really liked that they weren't a couple. They weren't a couple that had broken up, that had all of these plans for marriage after high school and college, and then they broke up and had all this horrible baggage full history. It was kind of a refreshing new take that he had a crush on her, but that they had been rivals and that they had known each other, but they hadn't been a couple.
Yeah. And that they were competitive off each other. And it's very rare for Hallmark to have two lawyers as your and I think what made that, I liked the fact that they were both doing this to help their family, whether it's his aunt or her dad, and so neither of them was a bad man of business, neither of them that needs to be kind of reformed or whatever.
She didn't hate coming home. That was another thing I really liked. She didn't come home grudgingly. Her dad called. She said, I'm on the next train.
It's a very good point. Very, very good point.
One thing I will say, though, about like the family kind of dynamic is I think Aunt Margie did not get enough screen time. She was missing from like the back half of the movie for me. I wish we had seen more of her and understood more of like their dynamic and how she was feeling about this whole thing. But other than that, I really did love like the family elements of it.
Yeah. Well, and also I would have liked to have known more about what happens to with that land when it's not hosting Fall Fest, because I don't understand why they couldn't just host Fall Fest somewhere else. There's nowhere, there's no other land. I mean, and if it's so valuable, then I would think they'd want something on that land, that's not just for fall.
I think they said they grow the pumpkins there.
Oh, do they grow the pumpkins? Okay.
Which I guess, because he was saying like, my mom knew that this land was great for pumpkins or whatever.
Oh, okay.
I think that's why she wants part of it to grow her flowers and part of it to grow the pumpkins.
But
maybe that's why they can't move Fall Fest, because all the pumpkins grow there.
Maybe.
But I agree. It was a little bit, it wasn't as clear as it probably could have been.
We also had Maple the dog, which is adorable.
Oh,
that was sweet.
You bring the dog on screen and everyone else forgets everything.
Yeah, that's right. That's very cute.
She's such a good girl.
But did you guys die laughing when they show the courtroom scenes and there is all kinds of fall decor in the courtroom.
I just love the fall decor in general. Why don't people do this?
But in a court of law, like on the judge's podium or whatever, he's got like pumpkins and stuff. What can you imagine?
What's wrong with decorating the bench?
It's crazy. It was so funny. I was dying laughing.
If I were a judge, that's what my courtroom would look like.
So ridiculous. It made me laugh. Yeah, only in if there was an alternative Hallmark universe, then there would be pumpkins on the judge's podium. That made me laugh really hard. I thought that was so funny.
So yeah. You want to know a fun Easter egg?
Ooh, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so my sister-in-law was the pretty Asian lawyer who Aaron's character approached first to help her out.
Yeah,
very cool.
Right after going to Trevor's character. Anyway, so she told me that cafe, in real life, it's a chocolate shop, and they make their own chocolate. And a friend of our family. Her husband knew the owner, so they got a tour a while back, and it was a very artisan sort of chocolate shop, and they got to do a chocolate tasting there, and they even rubbed it between their fingers, and my sister-in-law, Shelley is her name, she said, I could not get enough of that chocolate, and she even tweeted during the tweet fest, she said, if you ever get a chance to go to this area in Utah, go to that chocolate shop. And then the other fun thing was that right after she says, that's what happens in a small town. And then she says, oh, excuse me. Hey, Brett. Brett is my brother's name.
Oh, funny.
So McLean, the producer, he was on set that day, and he said, shout out, hey, Brett. It was just a goofy, fun little Easter egg that no one except us in the family are going to know. That she's
and now
calling out
all
her
the listeners of Hallmarkies.
And now all the listeners of the Hallmarkies podcast are going to know that she called out her husband's name, my brother, but that wasn't him. It was just benefits of living in a fault in a small town. Oh, hi, Brett.
So how many crowns, Elise, would you give this movie out of 5?
I'm going to give it a 4.1. I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am going to give it a 3.75. I have it at 17 in my ranking.
Very good.
What about you, Cami?
I'm with Elise. I'm going to go with a 4.1. One thing that it was that didn't quite stick with me was that final kiss. I was like, "Oh, it wasn't quite as I don't want to say involved because that sounds weird, but it just wasn't quite, as much, I guess, as I wanted. And I'm a huge sucker for putting a kiss in the middle of the movie. I don't, my friend Sarah and I, we call them one kiss wonders. The ones that just kind of throw in a kiss in the last 5 minutes. Not a huge fan of that. I so much prefer when they throw a kiss in the middle of the movie. And, but I thought the chemistry between them was great. I loved their bantering back and forth. That's what they said on the Facebook Live, that was probably their favorite part of the movie is just the bantering back and forth between the two of them. And I loved the Leaf Peepers tour smushing them together. Yeah. I thought that was very clever.
That's cute.
But yeah, I'd probably go with a 4.1.
Cool. Great. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about your newest book, Elise. This is so exciting. Book Love Spells for the End of the World. This is a very creative, fun book. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed reading it. And why don't you tell our listeners, tell them a little bit about what this book is about.
Yeah, so it is set in kind of a fantastical version of America where there's this village called Layton that is, it doesn't exist for 11 months out of the year, at least to mortals, like non-magic people. And then during the month of October for Halloween, they open up their gates and let humans come in. And it's a little town full of like witches and, you know, all these kind of fantastical creatures. The Headless Horseman lives there now. He fled there after the Satanic Panic of the 80s. It's like a very fun kind of, you know, Halloween story. And it's about a witch who has to recruit the help of a witch hunter. Who's actually been after her specifically for the last 10 years to help her stop the end of the world. Mm-hmm. So it's a really just, I, you know, grew up on movies like Halloween Town and Hocus Pocus. And I wanted a book that made me feel like I was, you know, watching those same movies again, but just kind of more for grownups. So it's not like, it doesn't have like, you know, adult material or anything like that. But I did, you know, I wanted to write something that, you know, I could read now and have those same kind of feels. So yeah, that's the story.
Especially Halloween Town, I think, is a very great comparison because of the different, that's sort of alternate dimension in Halloween Town that exists as the opposed to the human world that you have. And so I think that's a really interesting comparison. And yeah, how did you come up with this whole, with the concept, with all of the idea of sort of the witch hunter and the, this, how did you, and then the idea of sort of the, with this end of the world, with the hellmouth, coming in and taking over the portal. There was a lot. And how did you write it out? Did you map it out before?
Yeah, so the very first kind of kernel of this idea was like 3 years ago. I was diagnosed with anxiety, and I wanted something that would help me kind of, you know, manage my free time and help me kind of get out of my own head. And writing was always a great outlet, but once my writing became my profession, it was something that added to my anxiety rather than lessened it. So I started to knit, and as I was knitting,
so you're the knitter.
Yes. So while I was knitting, I was kind of imagining, you know, pouring all of my anxiety into these things that I was creating. But then my mind was like, well, what if you give the person you give the scarf to the anxiety? And that's where this idea comes from in the story. Belle, our heroine, who's a witch. She's not a very good witch, unfortunately. And she starts knitting to help with her anxiety. And she accidentally knits it into all these scarves that she sells on Etsy. And it ends up in the hands of an ancient who is like kind of a magical being who takes it as a declaration of war from Earth. And so she tries to destroy all of Earth, and Belle has to fight against it. And I'm always a big fan. You know, I grew up in the Twilight era, so I love kind of impossible romances, you know, human, vampire, witch hunter. So I thought it was kind of a natural way to kind of put these characters together. And, you know, I always love the idea of something non-magical breaking the magical thing. You know, kind of like the magic was inside us all along, you know, ruby slippers and all that. So, I like the idea of kind of pushing the human and the magical together.
Mm-hmm. I loved your interaction between Eli and Belle. I really thought the way they met up, actually talking for the first time with her in the snare. And I remember saying, because I knew that they were going to fall in love. And so I said, what is their first kiss going to be like? And then I read it and said, that's not what I was expecting.
Yeah.
I never would have seen that coming.
Yeah.
Because I thought, but you're, and then just their whole, I don't know, just their whole dynamic, the way they played off of each other, the way things ended with her and the crook of his arm. I thought that was really, really great. And just the way that they bounced off of each other, both as rivals and then as a couple. I thought that it was really, really great.
Thank you so much.
I really liked how you portrayed the sort of Mags, like they literally like have a spark basically when they touch, and that magnetism together was really palpable, and I really enjoyed that.
Passing through the magical barrier. Mm-hmm. Well, sparks really do fly.
Yeah. I liked that a lot. And she would touch his hand and she would literally feel a shock in her body. And that just added to the romance.
Oh, thanks.
I think that was fun.
I have to ask you, Elise, does your husband wear glasses?
No, he doesn't.
Okay. Because
he
does like
to put mine on and make fun of me, but he does not wear glasses.
Because you made glasses sound very appealing.
I love a man in glasses. What can I say? Mm-hmm. All of my favorite Hallmark side characters have had glasses. Yeah. I love
you won't
the
tell
side
your
character.
Husband.
Yes. I loved, what was his name? The one, oh, never mind. Ugh. All of them with glasses, I love them.
Yeah.
I'm curious.
It was George Wickham in the Pride and Prejudice one from last year.
Oh, yeah, he was really good.
He was really good and cute.
Jessica Landis.
I liked him. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love a man in glasses.
He wasn't anything like Wickham at all, even a little bit.
No,
but
not even a little bit.
Not even a little bit. but he was a lot of fun.
At Pemberley Manor is what you're thinking.
Yes.
We should take a second to congratulate you on your wedding. Last time we had you on the podcast was in June and you gotten married. So that was so exciting.
Wait, I didn't know this. You're a newlywed?
Yes.
I am. I just got married in July.
Oh, congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
I was curious, for her aunts, were you at all inspired by it? They kind of reminded me of Mrs. Watson and Mrs. Who and Miss Witch from Wrinkle in Time. Was that at all?
A little bit. They were more for me inspired by the book and television series Good Omens. I always love love the idea of kind of like the worst character you can think of and the best character, like bringing out the kind of highlights and shadows of each other. So having, you know, kind of a dark elf and a light elf as, you know, aunts, I thought was a really fun kind of dynamic to play with. Mm-hmm. And especially like raising this, they raise Belle together. And so she kind of takes on the best qualities of both of them. Like she's very, very fiery, but she's also very compassionate and loving. And I loved having both of those. I liked having them to play off of each other.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any inspiration for how you ended up portraying Belle as her character?
No, I mean, she as soon as I wrote the first lines of the book where she confessed, okay, it was me, I'm the one who accidentally ended the world. As soon as I wrote those lines, I kind of knew who she was, and she kind of, I'm never one of those people who's like, the characters write themselves, because they don't. It's so much hard work. But I think Belle had a very strong voice, and I loved kind of letting her lead, and Eli always kind of being a little bit terrified and a little bit in awe of her. Was really, really fun. So, yeah.
That's cool. It must have been a nice break to work on this from your other books, which are more set in our world. And mm-hmm. and it must have been kind of nice to just do something a little bit more just bonkers, for lack of a better word.
No, absolutely. It was a great palate cleanser. So much of my work, especially, you know, when you're working with Lifetime and Hallmark, is, you know, is this realistic? Is this something people are going to be, you know, relating to and engaging with, like, and not just like rolling their eyes and being like, oh, this would never happen in real life. And this book just gave me total permission to be like, nope, the skeleton sings opera and the you know, headless horseman runs a taxi service. Like, it just happens. That's how it works in this world.
Don't forget the French-speaking, blood-sucking bat.
Yes, absolutely. So it was really fun. It really did, and it was a total reset for me. It was great to go back to my other work and really just be like, oh no, I do love both. I love both things. I love the fantastical, and I love, you know, kind of the grounded, realistic, romantic stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Congratulations. And where can people find the book if they want to check it out?
The book, Love Spells for the End of the World, is available exclusively on Amazon, and it's free if you have Kindle Unlimited. So you can check it out today.
Very cool. Well, we will have a link down in the description if people want to check that out. And so this was really fun, even though we only had one real true Fall Harvest movie, but at least we had your book, and then we had our fake pretending to be Fall Harvest movie to talk about. So this has been a lot of fun. Thanks so much for taking time out of your day to talk about these movies. We are excited for the Christmas season to be coming up strong. We're going to have a very busy week next week where we are going to be posting, I think, almost every single day. So it's going to be very, very crazy. Including,
be busy.
Yes, including next week, we have our next Wednesday, we have our big epic Hallmark preview that everybody loves. And we are so excited about it. And we're waiting. It's going to be a interesting night for me because we are going to record it on Tuesday, and then I am going to be editing it and then getting it up on Wednesday. But we wanted to wait till the last possible minute to make it as accurate as humanly possible because they make so many changes. We're going to try our best, and it's going to be really, really fun. And then, yeah.
Don't forget the fact that we're doing this in October.
Right. Yeah.
Before Halloween.
Yeah. And we're going to have coverage of the Good Witch movie with Georgia next week. We're also, there'll be that recap. Then we've got interviews. We have an interview with Catherine Disher coming up, which we're so excited about. There's just a lot of very fun stuff planned for the podcast. And so definitely look forward to that. And so Elise, where can people follow you on social media and all that fun stuff?
On Twitter and on Instagram, I'm at Writer Elise. So that's the word writer and then A-L-Y-S. And then on Facebook, I am Elise Murray, author.
Great. And Cammie, what about you?
On Instagram and Twitter, I am at Cammie Drama Girl. And then on Facebook, I have a Hooked Hardy Facebook page, and that's Hardy with an I-E, and Cammie is spelled K-A-M-I, by the way. And then my blog is hookedhardy.com.
Great. And we'll have that all in the description section. You can follow me at Rachel's Reviews, all of our social media, and on iTunes, YouTube, and on Rotten Tomatoes. So be sure to check that out. And then you can make sure you're following the podcast at Hallmarkies Pod and Hallmarkies Podcast, all over social media and on iTunes and YouTube. And if you're listening on iTunes, please give us your ratings and reviews. It really helps us out, help people find the podcast. And if you're listening on and watching on YouTube, give us a thumbs up, subscribe to the channel. We really, really appreciate that as well. And consider becoming a patron. We are going to have exclusive content as much as we can throughout the holiday season. And also we have giveaways and other fun perks to being a patron. So check that out. We also have our merch store. We have a big sale that's starting today over at the merch store. So you can get the shirts for $13, which is a really good price. We have our exclusive designs for Jessica Miller for the holidays that are so cute, and much more. You've got your postable gear. You have all the other fun inspired items. So please check that out. tpublic.com/Hallmarkies. And so lots of fun stuff going on. We're really excited about it. And thank you so much, ladies, for coming on and talking about these Fall Harvest movies with us. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.